Hello, everyone. We are here talking about womanhood on the occasion of International Women's Day, the ins and outs of what it means to live well as a woman. Research tells us that 1 in 5 women experience a mental health condition compared to 1 in 8 men. Whether that's due to increased demands, burdens, and expectations on women, or a society that is not well equipped to support women, we are going to talk about how we at the Women's Health Service at the Lighthouse are trying to address this and offer services that truly cater to our community here in Dubai. Before we get into our conversation, I want to share a quote by our colleague and the founder of the Lighthouse Arabia, Dr. Saliha Afridi. She says, "A strong woman is not as good as or as tough as a man. If she stands in her full power as a whole and balanced woman, she would be a force like the world has not seen before." So on that note, let's begin with some introductions. I'll start by introducing myself. My name is Dr. Samer Fakhro. I'm a clinical psychologist at the Lighthouse and the lead for Women's Health Services. And I'm joined here with my colleague, Rebecca.
My name is Rebecca Carter, and I'm a counsellor at the Lighthouse Arabia, focusing on trauma and somatic body work, and also a registered yoga teacher.
Great. Thank you, Rebecca. So I know both of us are really passionate about women's health. And, you know, I think both of us have been key, let's say, clinicians who have been on this journey of building this service within the Lighthouse. So, I mean, if we were to think, what is women's health? Because it's kind of a new concept to the world. How would you describe women's health?
I feel like women's health is anything, any kind of psychological, somatic, spiritual sort of journey that is specially related to the woman. Mm-hmm. So a woman's experience. And I think that can cover so many things from young girls to teenagers to adults to kind of post-menopause, that you, like, a woman's journey is going to have so many different roles, experiences, and women's health is really just focusing on those specific experiences related to being a woman. So it might be fertility, motherhood, your cycle, it could be journeying into the world of work, being a caregiver, having children. There's so many things that women, or will affect a woman's mental health and physical well-being.
That makes a lot of sense. And what I really appreciate about the idea of women's health is that it integrates the two. I know that's something we're both really passionate about. It integrates the physical and the mental, which we know are actually one thing, but unfortunately our world or our medical model has divided the two. But it also integrates, like you said, the kind of psycho-spiritual and something greater than the body. But there is so much to women in terms of her body and her experience, you know, about PMS and the cycle and hormones and the 28 days and what that represents, how that impacts us. And then thinking about menopause as well and other physical health conditions. I know that Gabor Mate does a lot of research around around physical health conditions in relation to mental health. And they found that 80% of autoimmune sufferers are women. And we know that autoimmune conditions are one of those physical health conditions that are truly impacted by stress. And he talks especially about women being more vulnerable because women have a tendency to choose niceness over connecting to their true selves. So I think it's really interesting that the research is now showing us the importance of integrating the, the physical and the mental for women.
Absolutely. And I think that a lot of the women that I see, there's this kind of fear around embodying rage and anger and grief and all of these difficult emotions because they are so physically felt. And I think that part of anyone's journey, but especially for women, is being able to feel safe enough to express anger, rage, all of these difficult emotions, which are so somatically felt. And I think that kind of plays into also when we suppress emotions, we end up being burnt out, we end up being sick, we end up you know, in those statistics of 80% that have an autoimmune disorder.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the more that we express and we release and we're able to channel our difficult experiences, the more our bodies will change.
Yes, definitely. But I can also think about why women have gotten into the situation. And actually, some research around the workspace has showed that women are more highly assessed based on their likability.
Mm.
Their evaluations are more based on likability than men are.
Mm.
So there is this constant pressure from society for women to be likable, to be nurturing, to be loving all the time.
Yeah.
And for women who are assertive, they're often seen as bossy or too controlling,
or masculine,
too masculine. So that does lead to women suppressing a lot. And, you know, as we said, the research shows that that's having a big negative impact on their physical well-being. So,
yeah, because I think a lot of being nice and being good and being well put together, it kind of fits what society may want of us, but then it ends up women are the ones that suffer because we kind of prioritize just being good and not causing any conflict. And
yes,
I think it's nice to help women know that they can embody both, and it doesn't mean that to be strong and assertive and confident is being like a man, but they're qualities that we all have within us.
Yes,
that it's safe
exactly.
to embody.
It's safe to be that too.
Yeah.
So I guess with both of us being women, I'm curious, what brought you into this area of women's health in particular? Because, you know, you kind of went into counseling and somatic work, but what about your life brought you to womanhood?
It's always a big question. I just knew from a young age, I was so curious about why things were the way they were. And I studied sociology and I loved it. And I really fell into feminism.
Mm.
And I started to write all of my essays and dissertations on the woman, the female experience.
Mm.
And I became so curious. I was like, God, why is our experience like this, not only with men in society, but between women as well?
Mm-hmm.
And then as I went through my counseling and psychology journey, I just became really fascinated with, I guess, like a kind of woman's personal experience and the individual journeys that we go through in our life. And then I became really interested in the somatic and spiritual aspect of it. And I was really drawn to how women heal and how women come together and we partake in these sacred rituals and we connect with nature. And I found in my own life, I had like a really amazing group of women around me.
Oh, amazing.
And I thought to myself, it was because of these women that I had around me and all of their journeys and the things that they were also sharing with me. We were sharing wisdom over tea, but it was so healing.
Yeah.
And then I think I went through my phase of being like a diehard feminist and was like, yes, you know, just really exploring patriarchy, the impact on women's mental health, the ways that our bodies are oppressed, the unequal opportunities.
Yeah.
And I just became really passionate about wanting women to feel a sense of safety and kind of confidence and empowerment in their body. And then a couple of years ago, I got really into cycle syncing and the womb related work. And then I think that alongside my yoga training just took me on this really deep spiritual journey of going within.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the time I was seeking answers externally.
Yeah.
And then I came back to my body and I started to realize how disconnected I had been. Trying to push myself working in this kind of masculine world.
Yeah.
And then when I came back to my womb and my feminine qualities and my cycle, I was just able to embody feminine living. And I think the qualities of being a woman are often the qualities that are not seen as successful. You know, to receive, to be more present, to be creative, to nurture. They're things that in a capitalist society don't produce success.
Yeah.
And I think I rejected that, and then coming back to my body, it was like, wow, my whole nervous system could just take a deep breath. And I'd say that as I take a breath, because it was like, it was like it was just really empowering
To finally be able to be and to just let go of all of these expectations, which, you know, for most of us are unconscious most of our lives, because as you said, for you, that many people might be feminists and they might be very much connected to women, But in reality, we might still be disconnected from our bodies without even realizing. And that is just a reflection of how intense, you know, the systems in place are, and how unconscious, because we see other people functioning that way. We think we should be able to as well, or we should be that way, disconnected. And I love what you said about feminine qualities, because they're so powerful, even in the workspace, to be, for example, creative, to be more of like a people person, to be connected to people, to be intuitive, to be able to surrender when you can't control something. All of these things are really empowering on teams, but we are kind of wired to think that what's good is what's productive, you know, what's going to get us, you know, to X goal. But it's so beautiful to hear that, you know, you've been able to step into that. And I know I can relate to a lot of what you're talking about in my journey. And when I look back, I always think, oh, I've always been, you know, I had in my mind this idea that I've always been quite feminine and enjoyed femininity. And I always had this idea growing up, I want to be a mother. And, you know, what we quote unquote ascribe to be feminine. But in reality, I was totally out of touch with my true qualities, my true nature. And I was someone who was very academic focused, very goal oriented, and experiencing high levels of stress that I didn't even know was stressed until much later in life. And actually what revealed it to me was when I started my fertility journey and trying to get pregnant, and it was around 2020, and I realized that it was taking me a long time, and it made me realize actually how disconnected I was from my body and how difficult it was for me to surrender as well. And that to me was a key turning point. And it helped me lean into spirituality and yoga, you know, yoga philosophy of surrendering and embodiment and true acceptance of what is. And so even though it was a tough period of time, I think it's probably given me the greatest gift of knowledge of myself and connection to myself as a result.
I often find that we reach these points of wisdom and like deep spiritual practice when we've gone through really difficult, challenging times. And I think that it feels difficult at the time, but then when you receive the gift of it, which is being back in your body, because I really hear when you say that it was like having to surrender and come back to your body and listen to it. And often we're in our heads all of the time, and we judge ourselves and we're critical and we're trying to find answers. But I love that, you know, you kind of say throughout that time in your life, you had to just come back and surrender, because your body will tell you, it will guide you.
Okay, so we'll come on to the next topic, which is related to what you're saying, which is we're very often trapped in our minds. We hold a lot in our heads, especially as humans, and our brain can only take us so far, let's say. And we're starting to realize, and the research is starting to point to, the fact that embodiment, or truly being in your body, is so important to overall wellness for men and for women. But we've been touching on what it is to be in your body. So I guess what the science is starting to show us, especially, for example, polyvagal theory, which many therapists and psychologists are now picking up to integrate into mental health services, is the impact of the nervous system. It's all in our body. Anxiety is a physical state. It's actually not a mental state. Anxiety is sensations in the body. It signals to the body that you are unsafe at the moment. And so the first things you'll notice are the physical symptoms, if we are embodied enough to even notice them, which is heart racing, you know, shortness of breath, maybe dizziness, maybe tingling fingers. So it feels particularly important that we talk about embodiment.
And I think that, you know, we can't think our way through. And I think a lot of us as psychologists and counsellors, we learn so much about the mind in our training. And then we get into the room with our clients and we're with a whole body. And then we start to learn the language of the body. And we can't think our way through it. Like you were saying, it's so physical.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the time, you know, it's so natural for us to want to be in our minds because it gives us that sense of, well, if I can figure it out, then I can control it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think embodiment really means finding a sense of safety and allowing your body to guide you through the journey that you're on,
mm-hmm.
and living from your body as well.
Yeah.
And there's an amazing book called My Grandmother's Hands, and it's by Rezma Meneka, and he speaks a lot about the vagus nerve being your soul nerve, and that it runs all the way back from, you know, the base of your brain all the way down through your heart and your lungs, and it connects you to every part of your body. And he says we should really work with our soul nerve because it's like the doorway into our psyche and our emotional experience.
I'm sure many people would be able to relate to this when we start recognizing a very active mind, especially that's constantly stimulated by notifications on the phone, by emails, by problems to solve at work, is actually inhibitive to our own growth, because we become so distracted by everything around us, by the thoughts in our mind and all the stressors that come up, that it prevents us from connecting more deeply to a true meaning, to purpose, to our bodies, to, you know, the greater wisdom within or the inner guide, you know, whichever way a person that resonates for them. But even if we don't go describe it spiritually, we're just talking at the level of our minds are really distracting us from what it really means to be alive, from our values.
Yeah.
And our minds are so powerful in the sense that if we can, you know, mold it to be useful for particular things, that's great. You know, it helps us get from point A to B, and it helps us achieve goals that we want to. But it does actually, 90% of our thoughts each day are repeated thoughts from yesterday. So
it's scary to think that, because
you
think your mind is so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny how we see that often as the body and mind are split, but they're not.
Yeah.
And so much of what I think plays out in the mind and the body is this constant loop of the feedback, the conversation, the communication that your body has. Because I think a lot of time with anxiety, it's a sensation, and then the mind puts a thought to it, and then the anxiety, and we get stuck in that cycle where I think if we learn to feel safer, especially women, you know, with all of our experiences of unsafety at times living in society, I think when we can come back to our nervous system, we focus on regulation, deep breaths, mindfulness, and we create an inner safety.
Yeah.
I think it will feel so much easier to go on the journey of exploring life with our body and through our body, not just through our heads.
Yes, it makes me think of this work I'm doing with a client, and I've been seeing her for a while, and she does experience anxiety. But recently she came into a session saying, I'm feeling really worked up and I don't know what it's about. So she sat on the couch as she usually would, but immediately wanted to go into kind of problem solving. Where is this coming from? And is it because this happened yesterday, or because this happened? And I said, are you comfortable just getting on the floor and us sitting on our yoga, pulling out the yoga mats and just connecting with the feeling and allowing the feeling to be? And so we connected to where she feels it in her body. We did a bit of breathing, directed breathing to that space, creating some spaciousness, doing a visualization and doing a bit of stretching. And very quickly, she just started to release, you know, lots of tears were coming out. And she said, I don't know where this is coming from. I don't know what it's about. But what's most important for all of us is that she left the session feeling lighter and better. And that's such an important lesson, that when we're feeling anxious, it's the priority is not finding out what am I anxious about so I can problem solve it.
Mm-hmm.
Or when our body is feeling anything, sadness, rage, trying to problem solve through our brain is not going to address what the feeling is, because the feeling is what's living inside of us. And all we need to do is connect to the feeling, to witness it, to allow it to be. You can see it as a portal or a message that's coming to you, and to almost like embrace it and move through it. And it's so powerful to realize that actually emotions are temporary, and all we have to do is be with them, and they can move through us and be released. And the meaning making we can do later, but that is truly what we find change happens through breaking those patterns.
Yeah, and I love what you said there around just allowing her to accept it's there and be with it, because I think so much of our tension and anxiety comes from resistance. Yes. And I think that's especially for women is a concept we really have to learn. It is to stop fighting, to stop resisting, to stop, you know, trying to kind of push our way through things. Mm. You know, when I work with clients the same way as you, in a somatic way, it's kind of not taking those deep breaths and those postures and those physical sensations for granted and skipping through the talking, yeah, to try and get to an outcome. It's actually saying, let's just pause there. What was that deep breath telling us? Mm. Can you go into that breath and let it speak? Mm-hmm. And I find that when women and all clients do that, their whole body just softens and they go, oh my God, this is what's really happening. Mm. This is what I'm really experiencing. Even though I wanted to talk to you about the story, yeah, I always think it's nice to know what is, or how is the storyteller feeling? Mm. Not the story, but who the person telling the story. Mm. How are you feeling telling this story right now? Yes. Because we get kind of lost in the words, but the body, the somatic embodiment, the releasing, that's so healing.
Yeah, and you know, the emotion is the true experience, whereas the story is constructed. Yes. We construct that based on our experiences and our ideas, mm, and but the healing comes through the emotion itself, comes through connecting with the body, through the, you know, because we can also see the emotion as the inner child speaking, the world of the inner child that doesn't have words. And the verbal is not going to actually heal as much as the kind of embracing that feeling. So I'm curious, in your work with people, how have you found embodiment or practice through embodiment, especially with women? What impact has that had on them?
It has been, I keep saying this, but like a deep breath, and it has been grounding and releasing, and it's been difficult and intense, but it's the most empowering thing, because I hear women come back week by week and say, you know, I noticed my body was experiencing that, and I noticed that I wasn't giving myself this, and I didn't push myself when I usually would have done that. And I was aligning with my cycle, and I noticed that the week before my bleed, my energy was low. So I ate this food and I let food be my medicine. And it's just, when I hear that, my whole being just lights up and I get so excited, because it just allows them to drop into all of this sacred wisdom that we have. Mm-hmm. And I truly believe that women are so powerful and we have so much wisdom. And often our experiences take us out of that. So they return back, even through motherhood or giving birth or fertility. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the time we disempower ourselves and we give our power away because we say, you know, you'll know better. You've done the academic training around it. And yes, there is a place for that. But I think a lot of the women that I've worked with have just reclaimed their bodies and the language around their body and been able to say, you know, even though they may have told me this, I knew that. Mm-hmm. I felt this, I trusted this. Mm-hmm. So I'd really summarize it through empowerment, deep trust. It's definitely intense, but it's the most sacred experience if you allow yourself to connect. Yeah. So I think those are some of the main ways. Yeah. How about you?
Well, I think that, if I speak from my own personal experience, actually, because that's oftentimes the best place, that, you know, that's the greatest evidence we have is our own journey. Mm-hmm. Of course, I will speak a little bit about clients, but I've recently made a decision to take a sabbatical, a few months off work. And I do believe that that came because there's always risk with making a big decision like mm-hmm. that. There's always other people's expectations to consider, society's expectations, mm-hmm. our partner, our children, and if we go with just that, we end up, of course, totally split. Whereas I believe that all the work I've done around embodiment and spirituality, and I do think the psychological work is part of mm-hmm. that, but I don't think that the psychological work is what got me here. Yes, it's connecting everything together to truly trust and surrender mm-hmm. to my intuition, like what feels right, even when there's evidence against it.
Scary.
It's a bit scary. It is scary to do that.
How did you get them?
Well, yeah, it's hard to say because, you know, we're always evolving from different experiences. I think partly it's motherhood. And then I did also do a retreat recently that involved a lot of embodiment and me connecting with healers, where I realized there's so much in my nervous system that's speaking that's unspoken or nonverbal. And then I started to stress that a bit more. And like I said, the spiritual aspect, you know, I did strengthen my spirituality through practice. But there is something that I can't really describe. I believe that we have a kind of higher consciousness or inner guide that is kind of leading the way, that I'm not doing to discover. It's just kind of, it appears
receiving.
But it does, yeah, it has been a lot of work, and it is still scary because I think in making a big decision, it's almost like being in free fall. And I work a lot with clients around this because many times I'm working with women who are in their 30s, 40s, 50s, who are kind of starting to evaluate and come to big questions about their life, whether that's if they're happy in their relationship, if they're happy in their job, if they've been parenting the right way. And I don't have the answers. That's, you know, and I oftentimes have to break the news to clients that I won't be able to tell them. But they have the answers, and that's the best news. And all they have to do is kind of listen more deeply to their bodies. And I've found that undoing shame, you know, connecting to the body is a big way to undo cycles of shame, of like, I'm not working hard enough, or I'm not meeting other people's expectations, I'm not good enough. Actually truly listening to your body and experimenting in small ways, like I woke up in the morning, my stomach hurts, and I did some movement, and these small ways of connecting to our body, it could just be a few deep breaths, they prove to us that actually the more we go into it, the more we serve. The first step is actually trust, and then test it out. And then you kind of get the fruit of it because you start realizing that it was worth trusting. But if we're living in our minds, it doesn't make sense to trust something before we have evidence for it. And that's something I learned a lot about in meditation, which is the trust has to come first. A part of us has to trust that this is going to be worth it. And then we might be able to test it out and see if it's working for us or not. And then we taste the wisdom.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like working with these archetypes of the mother, the kind of wise old woman, the inner child. It's I think a lot of the work in my journey with my clients is embodying and becoming the woman that I have really learned from and loved and really needed in my life to be able to come into my body. Because I think women as well, we live in cycles. Everything about our life, from our cycles to birth to pregnancy to you know, even having a child, everything is the constant, you know, rebirth and death of cycles. And I think that's a really nice way that you put it in terms of cycles of shame, because it also helps us know that, like anything, it will be a cycle that has a death and a rebirth. You'll never get stuck in it. And there is sacred wisdom. It's just building the trust that when you go back into your body, it will be okay. And I think especially for women, you know, our bodies especially have been a place of fear and violence and oppression, and often a lot of our experiences as a woman are directly through how our bodies are treated in society. So I think that I really want to help women heal their relationship to their body, to know it's safe to be in a female body. You know, luckily here in the Middle East, there is a real sense of safety around, you know, the female body for women. You know, working and living in London, it's a really different experience. And I realize how much you want to disconnect from your body because there's a sense of unsafety there. So I hope that, you know, the work that we do with clients really helps women know that it's safe to be in their body, even though a lot of our traumatic experiences will be felt and experienced through the body.
Yeah, and when you think intergenerationally, it's really fascinating to think that our mothers, actually, you know, if you think about it, our grandmothers carried our DNA because our grandmothers had our mothers in their stomach. And our mothers already had the DNA for our our, because they our mothers had already the eggs that they were going to use to create us. So whatever trauma has been experienced intergenerationally is carried in our DNA and is experienced in the body. And so, you know, thankfully our things are evolving around the world for women. But we still do carry, whether we've experienced trauma to our wounds personally, we probably do carry intergenerationally, whether that's been sexual violence or miscarriage or stillbirth or anything, you know, painful periods, anything like that is carried intergenerationally. So we hold so much in our wombs and absolutely. In ourselves.
And I love that, you know, in the work that we plan to do, there's a lot of processing and exploration and inquiry about the experience of your womb and then also your mother's womb and your birthing story, and allowing women to sort of explore that a bit more. Because when are we ever asked, what is the story of your womb? Mm-hmm. And I think to explore that in connection and community with other women, there's a safety to it. There's a sense of we're holding you together. And it reminds me of the spiritual aspect we speak a lot around, which is, you know, the intergenerational trauma and wisdom that we can embody from our mothers and grandmothers, and being able to connect more with your lineage and seeing what am I holding in my body that I maybe didn't even realize was part of my experience because it was my mother's experience or my grandmother's experience. And I know, yeah.
So yeah, speaking of the womb, I think, you know, I feel so grateful to work alongside you, because I guess as women and as therapists, we each have learned so much on our own journeys. And one of the things I've learned from you a lot is around cycle syncing, the idea of syncing our life to our cycle. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Where do we start? So I guess in short, cycle syncing is adopting a female-centered way of living. It is aligning your self-care, your nutritional... Okay,
let's start from the beginning. Because exactly. I didn't like my
and
intro.
And I was
anyway.
Laughing too much as well.
Yeah. Okay. Do I not look comfortable?
A little bit.
Is this better?
Oh, do I do that a lot?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
and then,
like,
you
push yourself for, like, a couple minutes.
Oh, and then does it come down? Yeah. I didn't
no,
even notice that.
Oh.
Now I'm going to be, like, hot with rooting my feet to the ground.
Grounding.
I'm not so distracted,
which is, I want to see. Okay, can you see it in the camera?
Because I can see the see-through table.
So one of the... So I know each of us... Okay, let me start again. So as clinicians, I guess each of us has different ways of working and different practices that we have in our own lives. And one of the things I've learned quite a lot about from you is this idea of cycle syncing. And I have to say, since hearing about it, learning about it, it to me, it like immediately clicked that why were we not taught about this, firstly? Secondly, when we actually follow it, the impact is so profound in terms of truly connecting to ourselves as women. And so I really think this is such a gift that we need to share with our community. And it's a really... you know, science-backed and straightforward way to connect to being a woman. So I wondered if you would be able to share with us a little bit about what cycle syncing is, or connecting your life to your cycle, your menstrual cycle.
Yeah, I agree. It's something that when I learned about, I was so shocked that I hadn't been given this information when I was 12, 13, 14, because I think for so many women, it would have alleviated so much anxiety, so much stress, so much low mood and kind of critical thinking, which a lot of us carry, because it really introduces you to a new language around the female body and connects you to your womb, your cycle. You know, I'd say like a big chunk of our life is spent experiencing our menstruation, our monthly cycle, and every single month we are you know, kind of living by these changing hormones, and we are living by new cycles. And I think cycle syncing really is about teaching women the tools to align with their cycle and their hormones. And it introduces you to different self-care practices, the foods that you need to eat, physical movement, communication and social relationships, and just helps you manage the fluctuating hormones in your body that will inevitably be having an effect on our mental health, our physical well-being. And it really goes into teaching women about the four distinct phases of your cycle, which is usually over a 28-day period. Mm-hmm. And it helps introduce women to cyclical ways of being, connecting more with nature, mm-hmm. developing a kinder, more compassionate and loving relationship with their body. And I think what I really love about it is that it is scientifically researched, backed up, there's so much evidence, and it helps, I think, for a lot of people and us who are living in our heads, trust, like you were saying before, around how can I trust it's safe enough to go into my body? And I think this is a real gateway into that. And so many women that I've worked with, when I meet with them and we talk about their mental health and the psychology, I then ask them about their cycles, and there is usually always a direct link yes. between the first half of my cycle, which naturally your hormones are going to be kind of rising and you're going to have more energy and you're going to feel more out there in the world. They instantly feel better. The anxiety is reduced, their moods are lifted. Mm-hmm. And as soon as we get to that second half, it's described as the negative bit, the difficult bit, the bad bit. And I think what I really am passionate about is helping women reclaim their relationship to their womb, to say, this is the evaluative bit, this is the reflective bit, yeah. this is the bit where I get to cocoon and engage in self-care and I can say no. Mm-hmm. And I think that when women start to see the direct benefits of eating foods that support their body, it will support their mental health, it will support their relationships. So it really is a sacred journey, and it's a beautiful journey. Yeah, yeah. But I think it's one that every woman should know. Mm-hmm. Whether you are also a mother who is no longer experiencing cycles, it's something that you can teach to your children or loved ones, yeah. and also to embody feminine ways of being. Mm-hmm. Because even if you are, you know, kind of post-menopause, it still teaches you to live with cycles and live with nature. Mm. And I just love that. Yeah.
That is also what I love about it, because I've always been someone who's into like biology and the human body and learning the science of things, but it was almost too much to hold in mind previously. And it was too theoretical. Whereas what I love about cycle syncing and the way that you explain it and that you've kind of put it together in our talks is around these four seasons, and it's very visual and very easy to grasp, you know, what's right for you. You know, we have the winter phase at the beginning, and you just have to visualize, what am I like in like a winter, very cold month?
Yeah.
And then also what it has given me is permission to slow down my workouts at that time and not be hard on myself when I'm struggling to meet the demands of work and demands of parenting. And so I can really make these adjustments, or at least the self-permission that I won't be functioning at 100%. But we have, you know, the every month we have the winter season, the spring season, the summer, and then the autumn. And I love how it connects, like you said, to everything. But ever since I've discovered it, I've started also bringing it into my clinical work. And recently I am working with a client who has quite severe PMDD, mm-hmm. which is premenstrual dysmorphic disorder.
Yes.
And it's the 2 weeks before the period. And she had been seeing a psychologist previously, who happened to be a man. I don't think all men are out of touch with this, mm-hmm. but her experience of it, of talking about these periods being so overwhelmingly emotional and anxiety provoking and, you know, almost like everything spiraling, her losing like, you know, meaning, her meaning in life and her anchor to what she's doing. It was so catastrophic, every month experiencing this for 2 weeks. And it was only understood by her previous psychologist as you know, a psychological journey, you know, what's coming up for you psychologically speaking, working with your inner world. And she felt so dismissed, you know, and so unvalidated in that experience, until we could, you know, I was able to share with her some resources around what fully is going on with your hormones. And it was nothing, you know, nothing hugely complex or, you know, scientific to understand, but just actually, this is going to be a hard period for you. What type of adjustments do you need to make at this time? And also, how can we adjust your diet a little bit to, you know, help with, for example, absorption of estrogen at that time? And so, you know, there's just so much wisdom to be learned from actually quite simple concepts that's really science-backed at the moment.
Absolutely. And I think it goes back to our point of helping women trust their bodies and stop turning against their bodies. Because I know in my experience before I embodied cycle syncing, I would try to train and work out the exact same way that I would during my ovulation, which my energy was completely different. And I would be so hard on myself and I would criticize myself and say, well, you were like that last week. Why are you not the same this week? And now I'm like, of course you wouldn't be the same this week. And I just wrap myself up with so much love. Mm-hmm. And I think that when we practice cycle syncing, we challenge that kind of violence against our body, which we experience at times out in society, and we start to create safety because we say, I'm listening and I'm giving you permission.
That's so beautiful. I wonder if we can come on to, you know, something that we both feel very close to in our own practices, but I know many psychologists and therapists are trying to connect more deeply with spirituality, because I think that as a profession, especially, you know, modern psychology and psychiatry has become so disconnected from spirituality, partly because spirituality, you know, even by Freud was seen as just a defense from difficult emotions. Many psychiatrists would, you know, diagnose any type of, you know, spiritual connection as kind of hysteria. And so as a result, I think the profession as a whole, as mental health professionals, for a long time had been totally disconnected from spirituality, and it was seen as something different to spirituality, or spirituality seen as something like inferior that you shouldn't talk about and explore because it's not sciencey enough. But spirituality, I think we're all starting to realize more, and especially living in a society that might have been not as disconnected from religion as, for example, because I lived in London as well. You know, I think some Western cultures might have become more disconnected from spirituality than, for example, living in Dubai, where there's perhaps culturally there is definitely more of this remaining connection to Islam, but many people also integrating different types of spirituality, non-religious spirituality, into their lives here, and something greater. Is that something that you practice with your clients, or you're able to integrate into your work with them?
Yeah, absolutely. And interestingly, across all religions, I think that spirituality doesn't have to have a particular focus. It's like the foundation of any religion anyway, that spiritual practice to something higher, to something bigger than us, a higher consciousness, however you describe and name it. And I think that it feels really powerful when we're able to bring that into the work that we do, because I think it engages clients with the feelings of hope and faith and optimism and trust and all of the difficult things that when we're anxious and low in mood that we're trying to control. I think it creates space for that. And I really believe that in order to be connected to your faith, you have to be in your heart, and then to be in your heart, you have to be in your body, and then to be in your body, you have to be in your breath. So it's like this sort of cycle that when we connect psychosomatically and spiritually, we can go on this journey. And I think it really helps people find a sense of meaning. Not necessarily the why or how or when is it going to be better or fixed, or it's just that trust in there is meaning to this experience.
I guess, you know, thinking about that, it's really helping anchoring people in meaning. It makes me think a little bit about at the moment how so many people around us, including ourselves, are grieving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the state that the world is in, but particularly what we are witnessing in Palestine, around so much devastation and loss and beyond what we could even imagine. And I guess we know that this probably happened historically, but we weren't able to see it to the extent that we can now. And, you know, I think particularly as women, you know, we are so sensitive and so connected, and we are witnessing the most horrific atrocities happening to women, to pregnant women, to babies. And to me, grief always brings up this. It connects us so intensely. We get confronted with what is life really about. And I know many people have been so moved to witness actually people in Palestine and how their faith has been their perseverance has been so profound, you know, in ways that we, you know, they're being tested in the most difficult ways, but their faith, or iman as we call it in Islam, has kind of persevered. And I think people feel really inspired by that, and it is connecting people in new ways to a greater meaning. But as I said, you know, the more we're confronted with death, I think, and grief, the more we start asking these questions about what is life really about, and and actually going again, as we've said before, going through the mind and thinking and trying to generate something out of thoughts feels so fickle compared to actually there's something much greater here beyond this. And actually, it's interesting, when we look into it scientifically, we know that there is starting to be lots of evidence towards spirituality, towards human beings being not just a singular body, but actually we are all interconnected. So I'm thinking about Dr. Daniel Siegel, who's a psychiatrist and very established in his neuroscience research, but he has written a book called Interconnected, in which he talks about how separateness is an illusion, even from the neuroscience standpoint, that we are all connected through something energetically much greater than the body and the mind. So we are now having energy, that's a Freudian slip, but we're now having evidence towards this. And I guess people are starting to realize that going through the kind of maybe Western model practices of psychology is insufficient for wellness overall.
I think that sense of being individual and separate and me and my journey takes, it actually increases mental health challenges, because you disconnect yourself from community, from Mother Nature, from the wisdom all around us. And I think that what's going on in the world, you know, everyone is feeling it on such a deeply kind of a deep level, because we are connected. You know, we're not just human beings here, we're kind of these spiritual beings having a human experience. And I think the emotions we feel are an example of why, you know, we are so connected, because we see ourselves in other people. And I think bringing spirituality into psychology is a really beautiful combination, because it helps you feel that, yes, this is me and my journey, but I'm not alone, and we are all connected, and I never am alone, whether it's society, people, God, whoever you believe in.
And I think it's really important that people know, because actually I came across some interesting research that said in Boston, a research study was done within a hospital that showed 60% of clients, so Boston is a very secular city in the US, 60% of people were looking for spiritually integrated mental health care. And of the 60%, 40% of those had no religion. They had no connection to a religion. So that's first thing to say, that if you're seeking more close, you know, more integrated care on spirituality, that's really normal. It seems like a lot of people are going through that and experiencing that. And I think an important message that we want to share also with people is that there's ways to get there. You know, there are ways of integrating spirituality, even if you're feeling confused in your spiritual journey, because we all go through these periods of doubt. And, you know, how do I actually give in? How do I start to surrender more? And how do I have more faith? And it might come across as something so vast and big, like such a big question that I can't get to without just trusting. But actually, the good thing is that we know, and we are kind of putting together workshops and services around this to integrate. How do we firstly start at the mind, move into the body, and how can that take us into the spirit and energetic connectedness between everyone, and actually fully integrate wellness for women, but of course at some point we'll probably offer it for men too, but we are starting with women.
Well, I know in our upcoming workshop the flow of that is really centered around mind, body, soul, and not seeing them as separate things but an integration of all of them, and how, you know, coming together in community and being held in a really safe, sacred, beautiful space helps people, or gives them permission to connect more with each other, with themselves, with, you know, the pain they may be holding. And I really love that about what we're planning to do with all of the women's health workshops and the themes around acceptance, surrender, trust. You know, I think it's really exciting because it is something new that we're doing, and it's not as common here in the Middle East to bridge that gap. And it's been really special to talk about this, and I know we're both so passionate about it, so I hope that we can also reach out to as many women as possible, and you've resonated in physically and in your body with some of what we've shared today.
I hope so. Well, there's more to come.
Yes.
And thank you everyone for listening.
Thank you.